I do this all the time. All my lectures are recorded and uploaded. So this is all there. This first little handout, which is just two-page handout, actually is about the mini course introduction. And I just wanted to set the expectations right so that you may not even need the second handout. Some of you may not need the second handout. And so let's start with the first one. First of all, why is it queuing and not queuing? And is there a E there or not? And that generally a US versus English issue. And the reason is because Oxford Dictionary, which is English dictionary, is, you know, very thick. You know why? Because they always have an extra letter in every word. You know, color, flavor, so on and so forth, which we don't need. So in queuing, why do we need an E, right? So actually it turns out it's not American versus English. Because there are no queues in England. Right? You go and form a line. You know, make a line, you know. Here you can form a queue, but there you form a line. Alright? So the queue is...
It's a verb.
Eh?
It's a verb in
England. If it's a verb in queue a line, yeah. Queue into a line?
You know,
okay, good enough. So, I was just making... I didn't check it out, by the way. But the idea is that the queuing is better. You know why? Because it is unique. It is the only word in English. Now, I haven't checked it out either. If five words together, if you find one, let me know. Okay. U-E-U-E-I. Okay? Five of them. It turns out that originally, in the days when we learned queuing, it was always spelled with E in there. However, later on, E was dropped, particularly by Microsoft. Microsoft, if you use Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or anything, it will correct it to remove that E. As a result of that, today we have 50-50 split. Amazon, I checked, has 1176 books on queuing and 1260 on queuing. All right? Google Scholar has 184,000 papers on queuing and 220,000 on queuing. Actually, queuing is gaining momentum. And however, queuing has been used by most respected computer scientists. So all of the books that I am reading, and including my book, including Kindock's book, they use queuing. The okay? And the journal which is published on this is called with an E. Okay? So we will use with an E. Now you know why you are using with an E. Alright? Now, what is the goal of this course? This is, first of all, this is an introductory course. So if you already know queuing, you won't get much out of this. So first thing, introductory course. Second word is applications. I'm going to emphasize applications and not the theory part of it. If you read a queuing theory book, it is full of equations, equations after equations after equations, and I find it difficult to read them. Okay, I'm not a theory person. I am myself a system person just like you guys. Okay, and so I'm going to take that angle. Many times, very often I will skip the proofs and maths and the theorem behind them. I will just show you the simple part, yeah. Okay, all right. So if that is what you're looking for, because some people will say, well, you know, so thing is, sometimes I may even simplify things just to make it applicable, okay? So this is the application of queuing theory for computer scientists. So we will take applications generally from computer science rather than taking from any other field. So we will talk about introduction to queuing theory, which is today, analysis of a single queue, and then we queued into queuing networks and operational logic. So this is the key. Operational laws were developed by computer scientists and they apply to all the computer systems. And they are not really in any other queuing books other than computer science books. Okay? And they are very simple principles that help us find the answer that we need. So that is something that if you have already heard about it before, we will devote about two classes on that. So make sure if you already know it, then probably you know most of it anyway. And then we will end with mean value analysis and related techniques. If I don't get there, that's fine, but operational logic is the key. Now, this is the tip of the iceberg. Right? In five classes, you cannot do queuing theory. queuing theory, there are multiple books, and there is check books, and people teach for semesters or two semesters. And here we are going to do the best we can do in 5 classes. So what will you learn? You will learn what are the various types of queues. And what is meant by MMMBKQ? You've probably not heard much of these. You have heard of MM1 for sure, but what there is more than MM1. How to obtain response time, queue length, server utilization. So some simple things you can very easily obtain on the back of the envelope. How to represent a system using network of several queues. And how to analyze simple queuing networks, because most of the systems are actually networks. How to obtain bounds for system performance using queuing models and some simple bounds. Here is a simple example. The average response time of a server is 3 seconds. Alright? And during 1 minute observation interval, the idle time was 10 seconds. That's the only information you have. The idle time and the response time. Based upon that, using some simple model, can you find the system utilization, average service time per query, number of queries completed during the observation interval, average number of jobs in the system, probability of jobs in the system being greater than 10, 90 percentile response time, 90 percentile waiting time, and so on. So for all of this, you can get from those numbers, 2 numbers. Right? And this is exercise number 31.3, so this is in some chapter which we will do, actually next class. So the idea is, there are lots of assumptions you have to make to get this, but you have to know what assumptions you have made, and then if you make those assumptions, then you can get some of the answers. Okay. And by the way, it has to be a two-way talk, in the sense that you have to ask questions, because I don't know how much is boring and how much is interesting. So by question and answers, I will figure it out that, yeah, this is something that we need to discuss more or less or something like that, right? So please, interrupt. So I went to Google Scholar and find out, basically, queuing theory is applied everywhere in many papers. So these are some of the 2012 applications. VM migration problem, cloud service, power consumption in servers, multi-core server design, delay trade-off in TDM, and inter-cell coordination in the cellular network. These are all the topics that you guys are working on too. And so there is a lot of queuing applications that you can see there. So what is the prerequisite? The prerequisite is that you should have some concept of probability and statistics. So you should know when I say mean, variance, and standard deviation. Right? You should know when I say density function, distribution function, coefficient of variation, correlation coefficient, median, mode, quantile, normal distribution, exponential distribution. Now, I don't know where they teach it. I don't know, is this taught in high school or in colleges? But this is the basic probability. Most of us actually use mean variance and standard deviation. Even if you have not taken a course, you know it. Right? Because when you present a number, you have to present a mean variance and a standard deviation. But some of you may not know density function or distribution function, the coefficient of variation, correlation coefficient. If that is the case, you may have to do a little bit pre-reading. You can start with the same book that they are going to use. And this is the book, actually my book. The book actually was written because of the requirement. Basically, what happened was I got my PhD from Harvard and went to digital to work there. And I found out that everything they taught about, analysis was really too complex. And I had to do very simple things for the management. Right? We designed, by the way, Ethernet. Ethernet 1 was designed in digital. I was a part of that team. So at that time, we had to, it was 1978-80 time frame, okay? So long time, many of you were not born probably. but we found out that the simple techniques work much better than the complex ones. And so I had to write this book, basically, which is based for the simple techniques. But so we actually go through this, so you may have to go through some chapters which cover that part, or you can find any other book. But we will try to, actually another thing is that we will try to cover minimal of that also when it comes to that point. And if we need a little bit more, ask me and we will do that as much as we can do in a class setting. And we'll see how far we can go, you know, if you don't know some of these things. So there are six classes and these are the dates. Today and going up to this September, sorry, October 31st. And so, and obviously we won't be, I'm not going to stop right, you know, at this boundary line. The boundary line is determined by you. If we cover half of the notation today, that's fine with me. We'll stop right there and continue from there next time. So it's not important for me to cover everything. What is important is that we communicate in the sense that you get it, and that's the whole purpose of my giving it. All right, this morning we had the lecture on gifting. Remember, some of you were there. This is the gifting economy. All right, homework. So there is actually something to be done after the class, and that is basically apply the to the concepts that we have discussed in the class to the system of your choice. Whatever you are working on, whatever PhD, master's thesis, whatever you are working on, just take a small part of that and apply that concept, and you have to turn it in. All right, you can make a team. Team of two is fine. More is fine too, but I think two would be good because otherwise, you know, it becomes, the problems are going to be very simple. It's not that you have to work 3 hours, you know, just you already know, and so it just back up the envelope thing, but I want to really apply the real problem, real numbers, real systems, not, you know, generated numbers. Generated numbers have plenty. Right? So that is the thing, and they will be due by Monday noon by email to me. All right? And the book is here. Now, talking about the book, we are going to have 4 or 5 copies of the book available in the lab. Kat has ordered those books. They have not arrived yet. And I think she's keeping track of when they will arrive. Hopefully they will arrive this week. And so there will be some copies available here. And there might be some in the library. I don't know. I haven't checked. And they are available on Amazon as well. All right. Now, this is not complete performance analysis. When I teach performance analysis, we teach the whole semester on many different things. And that we include measurement techniques, how to measure, how to characterize the workload, how to select the workload. We talk about probability and statistics. We talk about mean, median, mode, confidence intervals, regression, and so on and so forth. And most importantly, we talk about experimental design. Now, experimental design is one field that I found was totally absent from computer scientists. It is used in every other field where they do measurements, whether it is medical applications or whether it is agricultural applications. They design experiments and then they analyze them. In computer science, we don't do that. So I introduced, actually, I mean, in my book, I think for the first time, we introduced experimental design for computer scientists. And we discovered many problems with that as well. And so those are all discussed there. So that is a field that, you know, I emphasize that when you want to do a simulation, how many simulations are you going to do? Let's say you have 2 workloads, 3 configurations, and, you know, 4 this and 5 that. You multiply all of that, the number becomes 10,000. You're not going to run 10,000 simulations. So what is the minimum number? And how do you analyze them? That is what experimental design is all about. So if you're interested in that, if you're going to do any simulations, and if it is going to take a long time. If it is not going to take a long time, you can do all combinations. But if it is, actually it turns out, even if you do all combinations, there are ways to get better information than just simple ways that, you know, people would do without experimental design. So that is maximum information from minimum number of experiments. And then we talk about simulation. I'm giving lectures on clean theory, but most of the cues that you will encounter in the real world, you will have to do simulation. Because we are going to talk about exponential distribution, which you are not going to find in the real system. They will make lots of assumptions which are not going to find in the real systems. So what is it good that you know the theory? The theory is good because you can solve some corner cases and check your simulation. If you do put exponential arrival in your simulation and it gives a different answer than what the theory says, your simulation is a bug. Right? and I don't believe any simulation results. Any simulation result until it has been validated, which means you have at least there's some corner, you know, simulation, corner validation. Alright? And that is what this theory is good for. Because this theory will have lots of assumptions which will not apply to real systems. Alright? And so you really, for real systems, you'll have to relax those assumptions and you'll have to do simulation, but you can check your simulation using this theory. Alright. So, here's the first quiz. Actually, I have the quiz online as well, but I think you can do it on paper as well. So this is a prerequisite quiz, and I will show you the answer in a minute. And throughout this lecture, you know, they said every 10 minutes you should have a module and a quiz. So we'll do that. And so this you have to do on your own paper. I won't see the results, and I won't want you to share with me, but you can just mark true and false, and then I will show you the answers. At that point, you can see how many correct answers you have, how many incorrect answers you have. You have to subtract the incorrect. So minus 1 for incorrect, and plus 1 for correct, and 0 for no answer. If you don't know something, please don't answer. Leave it 0. Because if you answer incorrectly, yeah, you get minus 1. You know why? Because there is a 50% chance if you randomly do it. So with this grading system, you will get a 0 if you randomly mark. You get 5 correct, 5 incorrect. Sorry, not 5, whatever number it is. I think 8 or 9, whatever. And the quiz is available online as well. You can do it online as well. And I haven't been able to put all the quizzes online, but this one got in. Anybody need more time or done? Anybody needs more time? Raise your hand if you need more time. It doesn't matter really. This, you don't have to be afraid of not knowing something, please, because this is a class. Nobody needs more time? Wow. Alright, so I'm going to show the answer then. Oh, no. actually, let me just do this. Control A. Slide 14. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Questions are the same, different?
The last question is the same. The higher coefficient of radian.
Okay, all right, last question is missing. So I will give the answer for that one. Let us first go to the first, this one. The mean of 0 and 1 in form is half. Okay, so that is false. The sum of two normal variables with mean and 4 and 3 has a mean of 7. Now, the probability of a fair coin coming up head once and tail once in two throws is half. I will tell you why half. Because 0001, 1011, two combinations will be one head, one tail. Alright? So, the density function fx approaches 1 as x approaches infinity. Not always. I mean, density function doesn't, the distribution function does. Given two variables, the variable with higher median also has higher mean. Not true. Right? There are distributions where the mean and medians are in either side. The probability of fair coin coming up heads twice in a row is 1/4. This is a combination where you want 1-1. And there are four combinations. So you get 1/4. The difference of two normal variates between 4 and 3, mean of 4 and 3, has a mean of 4 minus 3, which is 1. The cumulative distribution function fx, capital Fx, approaches 1 as x approaches infinity. That is always true. Right? Okay, the last one. High coefficient of variation implies a low variance and vice versa. Obviously not. Right? The coefficient of variation is simply the ratio of standard deviation to mean. So if high coefficient of variation means it's high variance and high, basically, so that's okay. All right. So you know the correct answers now. And you can quiz yourself, mark yourself. Now it doesn't really matter how much you got. Basically, the idea is if you got high marks, then you would have easier time. If you got lower marks, then you will have to really do a little bit of reading about this whole probability chapter in the book. Oh. And you might find it useful at Las Vegas too if you do have to go there. But now there is second quiz right after this. Can I believe that? Second quiz is called post quiz. Just to be sure that you don't get bored, I have some tough questions here. And I would like you to really try this one as well and see how many you get right and wrong. If you don't get anything right, no problem. If you get everything right, there's a problem. I just want to make sure that people are not getting bored. So basically, this is what they are going to teach. Anybody need more time? Okay. Thank you. Done? Anybody need more time? Okay, I'll hear the answer. And I won't explain the answer right now because you just compare yourself. If you got, you know, basically whatever, how many more you got correct versus how many you got incorrect. And then you just compute. If you... Alright. And so basically, so the idea is that if you already know all about operational analysis and mean value analysis and all that, then, you know, there is less for you to gain here. Okay? And so, I just want to make sure that people don't get bored and this end say we didn't learn anything because they already knew everything. So, alright. So that's the end of this part with three messages. First is queuing is very common in computer systems. I don't know of a system without a queue. Alright, whether it is a disk, whether it is a processor, whether it is a computer, whether it is a laptop, there is a queue. So understanding queuing theory will help you make design decisions, very simple design decisions. And simple models are more useful than sophisticated complex expressions with invalid assumptions. And that's the difference between a systems person and an engineer and a mathematician. Is that, you know, they will come up with the statistics, people will come up with very complex, you know, formula and this and that, and that will get published in a journal because if you don't have those, they won't. So the idea is, but the insight is not there. The insight is not there because those assumptions don't apply, right? So I was raised actually in a different environment. I was raised in an industry environment. I worked 23 years in the industry. So there, obviously, I could not explain anything like even exponential distribution or anything to my management. So I had to make really simple techniques, simple results, right? And that's what the real world is all about. So with that, we'll move on to the next module.